You're listening to This Week in Fantasy Baseball. Hello, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Fantasy Baseball. I'm John Kuh, joined, as always, by my co-host, Patrick Fitzgerald. This episode's a little bit of a grab bag episode. Spring training is starting. We've got some news, some injury news that we need to talk through. And we've got a little bit of a mailbag episode as well. But before we could get into all that, Patrick, how are you doing?
Hey, John, I'm doing pretty well. Been enjoying the Winter Olympics before they come to a close this weekend. And we got Orioles' first spring training game tomorrow against the Yankees. So I'm looking forward to that. Trevor Rogers on the mound and just hoping that not too many other guys get hurt, because a little bit of a bumpy start already in that respect. How about you?
Doing well, yeah. Same, watching a lot of Olympics. Today was the gold medal game between the women's hockey Team USA versus Canada, which was a really fun game to watch. That was really good. But yeah, it's kind of weird that that's coming to a close. And then I think in, what, a couple weeks, we've got World Baseball Classic coming up as well. So international competition still coming on. Yeah, I believe the Twins play the Red Sox in their first spring training game on Saturday. Unfortunately, though, we're already out our ace to start the season. So we'll talk about that in a little bit. But yeah, spring training is not going so great for the Twins right now.
Yeah, there was a day last week where the hits just kept on coming. You know, all those press conferences, GMs delivering all that bad news you don't want to hear.
Right, exactly. And, you know, just kind of some random things. Like, for example, who was it? Coming out of Colorado, right? It was
like a signing, or there was news?
Oh, yeah, Chris Bryant. Basically just saying, he's not coming back for at least the first half of 2026, which, like, I don't think anyone was necessarily like, yeah, I feel like I can trust Chris Bryant to, like, be a centerpiece in my my fantasy baseball team this season. But nonetheless, yeah, just like random things like that where guys are just getting put on the 60 IL and there wasn't, like, any news about them previously.
Yeah, might never see Chris Bryant on an MLB field again, unfortunately. It sounds like he's just dealing with a lot of health problems that are affecting him outside the game, too. Really sad to see.
Super unfortunate. But yeah, before we get into the meat of the episode, just a reminder that you can follow our podcast on Twitter at ThisWeekPL. You can send us your fantasy baseball questions to our email at ThisWeekPLpod@gmail.com. Lastly, make sure you subscribe to or follow the podcast on whatever streaming platform you listen to. We're on all of them, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube. Wherever you listen, make sure you follow us and give a 5-star review if you enjoy the show. All right, we are going to start off with some injury news. It's, after all, This Week in Fantasy Baseball. That's what we talk about. Injuries and player performances, and so we're going to just kind of look at some of the injuries that are going around the league, and look at their replacements, people who would be replacing these people who would be injured, and whether, you know, it's fantasy relevant to check in on their replacements, or maybe, you know, for some of these guys, they're injured but they should be coming back sometime in the next couple of months. Like, do we still want to target them in drafts or things like that? So starting out, I mentioned this already, but Pablo Lopez, he's got what the Twins are calling a significant tear in his UCL. They haven't said that he is going to undergo Tommy John surgery, but everything is pointing to that being the case. But with him out for the season, that kind of opens up the rotation. Taj Bradley and Zibby Matthews are currently listed pitchers 4 and 5 on roster resource. David Festa also dealing with some of his own injuries, but he could also kind of maybe sneak his way into the rotation with Pablo now out. But starting with those first two guys, Taj and Zebby, any interest in either of these guys for fantasy? You know, now that maybe they have a little bit more of a role where they have a little bit of a longer leash because they're not necessarily getting pushed out as the number 5 or number 6 starter, you know, having consistent innings, is that something that you'd be interested in either of those guys?
Yeah, I mean, I always am going to be at least a little interested in Zebby Matthews. We're going to talk a little bit more about him later, I think, in the mailbag. But as long as he, you know, keeps posting solid strikeout minus walk numbers and keeps that stuff uptick that we saw last year, it's going to be hard for me to, you know, to just ignore him. Taj Bradley, definitely a scarier option, but he's had more major league success than Zebby at this point, right? He did have a decent season with the Rays, even if last year was pretty bad. So, yeah, I think that, you know, maybe like a flyer type thing, it looks like this is the type of guys where I might want to see, like, their schedule to start the year. It looks like they're both at the Royals to start the year, and then maybe the Rays after that, or Tigers. So, like, not the worst offenses, but not great offenses either. So Yeah, I'd feel okay, in a deeper league going for one of those guys towards the end or, like second, third of the draft, I guess. So, yeah, a little bit of interest, but definitely aware of how these guys can burn you, especially in a wins league where, the Twins might struggle a little bit this year.
Yeah, that's definitely true with it being a little bit rough in a wins league context. Kind of the conversation even between Bradley and Matthews. With Bradley, we just, like you mentioned, we have a longer track record for him. He has 385 major league innings, which is a lot more than what Zebby does. Unfortunately, that also means that we kind of have an idea of who he is, even though he's only 24, right? Still really young guy in terms of just baseball age. He's had basically three full seasons of work that we could look at. I know when he was coming up that that four-seamer was one of, the really elite pitches that he had. It's kind of gone down. And if you just look at PLV metrics, it's becoming a little bit worse over the past couple of years. And he doesn't necessarily have like another pitch that's like incredible. He's got a pretty decent cutter that can do some work there. But other than that, the splitter's not the best offering either. So he's really kind of limited to four seam cutter. It seems to be like those are two main pitches, and then he tries to add in something else to help that out. Zebby, on the other hand, very much kind of like kitchen sink sort of routine for him, but he's only had 121 innings in the majors. Last year he started 16 games, but still both seasons that he pitched finished with an ERA over five. We'll talk about him a little bit later, but the numbers don't look great for Zebby. But maybe if he gets a full season of work, maybe that allows us to have a better idea of who he is and whether it's actually someone worth investing in.
Yep. Biggest takeaway from this one, fantasy is a game that will humble you quickly. I got Pablo Lopez like past 150 in one of my, early drafts I did and felt great about it. And, now I feel like a fool, right? So there will be times like this where pitches just blow out. And yeah, these guys who end the season with injuries, maybe I need to be a little bit more careful with them if we don't see them back on the mound, actually healthy.
For sure. Yeah. And this was just like live BP. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, this is some little something. And then, oh, turns out it's a UCL tear. So, yeah, not great. All right. Moving to Atlanta. We've got two pitchers who are dealing with bone spurs. It's Spencer Schwellenbach and Hurston Waldrep. Both of them have actually undergone surgery already. Waldrep, it seems like it's more likely that he will be out for the entire season, which is super unfortunate for a guy who I think had a little bit of a hype through the offseason. Schwellenbach, the Atlanta's a little bit more optimistic about him, saying he could be back in a couple months. Either way, both those guys are going to be out for the foreseeable future, which kind of leaves a hole in the rotation. Currently, Roster Resource has Bryce Elder as the number five pitcher in Atlanta. And it's not really clear if there's anyone in their prospect rankings that could actually come up and take that spot from Elder. So just looking at all of that, is there any interest in a guy like Bryce Elder who, we've had a pretty decent look at him in the majors. It hasn't been necessarily great, but is that someone who might be worth investing in at the end of a draft?
I just can't. I mean, I know he had some really good starts down the stretch last year that people probably, if you're bolder than me, you might have taken advantage of. But, I just don't see where he's an asset for you in terms of categories. So for me, the biggest takeaway on this one is Grant Holmes, honestly. He's basically locked into a rotation spot now if he's healthy, which wasn't the case going into, just a couple weeks ago. He also, has a UCL tear and is pitching through it essentially. He's elected not to go the surgery route, which doesn't always work out. So I guess I'd be interested in him as a late pick, see how he does as long as he's healthy. And then in the minors, yeah, it's really just Didier Fuentes, I think. We saw that he was just not ready last year and he's only 20. He's going to be 21 this year. So maybe, this makes him more viable in terms of a mid or late season call up. But yeah, the immediate future, it's really Holmes is the biggest, kind of arrow up guy for me.
Yeah, I kind of agree there. It is unfortunate that Holmes also just happens to be dealing with that injury, though. So there's a little less, faith that that's going to work out. We saw how Tristan McKenzie tried to push through a UCL tear. That did not work out very well. Looking at their non-roster invitees, though, it's very fun sort of names. Martin Perez, Carlos Carrasco are just two of the guys who non-roster invitees to spring training who may be able to get the number five spot in Atlanta. But both those guys are very much kind of past their prime. at this point. So probably not a ton of interest in either of those guys.
Yeah, and I guess J.R. Richey too is the other prospect name. He's, you know, kind of back end of the top 100 type guy, and he's a little older than Fuente, so maybe we see him first, you know, depending on how he does in AAA to start the year.
Yeah. All right, Reese Olson also going to be out for season, dealing with a shoulder. Underwent shoulder surgery. This wasn't necessarily the response, but Justin Verlander also recently signed with the Tigers. You know, he kind of, not to say that his spot was ever going to be in jeopardy, but now with Reese Olson out, you know, it feels like, hey, you know, Verlander is going to be relied on at least every 5 days now for the Tigers. Any interest in a guy who's 43 and looked okay in San Francisco last year, but not great, but now has a nice little homecoming story?
Yeah, it's cool to see, at the least. And he was decent last year in the second half. I know it took him forever to get his first win, and that was kind of, you know, painful to watch. But he ended up getting his ERA below 4 and, you know, still had some strikeouts. So while the whip wasn't great, I do think, you know, there's going to be some opportunities where he's going to be useful, especially maybe in some home starts against weaker offenses. You know, Detroit's a good place to pitch, and I think especially early in the season, it's a good place to pitch. So I could see Verlander still having some nice outings, especially in a, you know, a weaker division and also just a comfortable environment.
Yeah, a 2.99 ERA in the second half of the season through 75 and a third innings. The whip was down to 1.3, and he had a 13.5% K minus BB. So, you know, decent numbers there. And like you mentioned, the park probably helps a little bit more. I mean, not saying the park in San Francisco is pretty good as well for pitchers, but Detroit is a pretty solid pitcher's park as well. Would you consider like putting a flyer on him in like the last round of a draft, or is he really more someone that is going to be on the waiver and then you want to see how he progresses?
Yeah, I think for like we're going to talk about later online championship ADP, which is where there's 360 players that get drafted. I would go for him in like a last round flyer. Might be a little schedule dependent. Looks like he starts, assuming he's in the back of the rotation, he'll be at the Diamondbacks first start, which I guess is kind of like a middle of the road type matchup. So yeah, I would consider him. He probably wouldn't be like one of my biggest targets, but if I get, you know, my biggest targets taken off the board, I might turn to him just to see if, you know, he has a couple of useful moments here and there.
Yeah. All right. Well, moving from Detroit to Toronto, Shane Bieber dealing with some forearm fatigue. Basically, last year he pitched a lot and now he's tired. That's kind of the way to think about it. Toronto has indicated he is not going to start the season with the team. He's going to start the season on the injury list, which gives an opening to, you know, either way you want to look at it, Jose Berríos and Cody Ponce are kind of in that number 4, number 5 spot in the Blue Jays rotation. Berríos last year kind of fell off really hard. I don't even think he was on the World Series roster. And then Cody Ponce, he was a signee over from the KBO, this past season. We talked about him on a previous podcast. Either of these guys do anything for you? You know, Berríos, I think, you know, we kind of jokingly label him the great undulator. But last year was the kind of the year that it really all fell apart a little bit. And then Ponce, you know, he's had decent seasons overseas, but now he's gonna be back in the United States, and I'm not sure how dealing with major league pitching is going to affect his numbers.
Yeah, Berríos is more of a guy in like one of those 50 round leagues where, you know, he's usually pretty durable. I don't think he'd ever been on the IL in his career until last year, which is crazy for a pitcher. So if you need a guy who's just gonna have to make some starts for you at some point, if, you know, if things hit the fan, that's kind of where I would turn to him. Not in a shallower league. So Ponce is more interesting to me there. You know, really revamped himself overseas and seems to have a nice arsenal and pretty loud stuff. So, yeah, he's like I think he's been going around pick 300, maybe pushed up a little bit more now that it seems like he's locked into the rotation. I'm pretty comfortable with him in, you know, like that 250, 300 range.
Yeah, Ponce, just looking at his numbers in Japan just this past season, in South Korea last season, 12.55 K per nine, which is kind of nuts. And over 180 innings too. So this wasn't just like light work, a 1.89 ERA. So really insane numbers. One thing to note, of course, is that the quality of competition in the KBO is, you know, a little bit similar to maybe like a higher level of AA or you know, even lower level of AAA. So obviously the competition is a little bit easier, but nonetheless, really, really good numbers for him in Korea. All right, sticking in, we're actually going to stick to the other team of the World Series matchup, the Dodgers. Blake Snell, dealing with just some nagging injuries, because when is he never dealing with some nagging injuries? This kind of maybe, I don't know if it opens up a spot. I think the Dodgers seem to be pretty keen on sticking with a six-man rotation. But this really kind of solidifies that Emmett Sheehan and Roky Sasaki likely are going to be on the opening day roster as the number five or number four starter. Roky, we saw what he could do as a reliever in the World Series, but we still don't really know what it looks like when he, you know, trots out every, you know, five games and is on the starting mound. Sheehan, you know, really solid pitcher that we've seen for the past couple of years, but you know, hasn't really had the opportunity to play a lot until, you know, last year where he got 73 innings. That was his career high. So needless to say, both of them, you know, we don't really have that much data on them. But anything you'd like from either of these guys to, you know, be, I don't even know if late round flyer is a correct analysis for both of these guys. I think there's going to be enough hype that they're going to be picked up maybe in kind of the earlier, like the mid-teens rounds in like a 23-round draft. But yeah, any interest in either of these guys?
Yeah, Sheehan definitely more so, although the price is really climbing. He's like right inside the top 120 right now, so people are all over him, at least in the online championship. So definitely a guy I wish I got before the price went up, but I think I would still at least consider him there. Sasaki, I need to see it first as a starter. You know, he was good in the playoffs as a reliever, but you can get away with two pitches there. You can't really do that in the big leagues as a starter unless you're, you know, a rare exception. So I'm looking, he's like pick 230, and the guys around him just seem more interesting to me, even if they're not, you know, they're not great, at least in their current form, right? We've got Bryce Miller and Zach Gallen. Those two guys struggled last year, but I don't know. I just think they'll offer a lot more than Roky Sasaki will. So even at the depressed price compared to last year, I think I'm still out.
I'm kind of curious with that price on Sheehan, because this is a guy who, based on what I'm seeing from his numbers, has never pitched more than like 130 innings in a season. You know, it's going to be helpful that he's on the Dodgers, right? So assuming everyone is healthy, you know, he's, you know, maybe pitching every 6 days, even if someone's hurt, right? It's every 5 days. That's going to get up, if assuming he stays healthy, right? That's going to be a kind of a workload of 160, 180 innings, best case scenario. Is that someone that you want to put a top 10 round pick on?
Yeah, maybe if I, you know, go extra stable with like my first two starters, I'd feel, you know, good going for the upside. I think there is probably a little bit of a Dodgers tax, and the six-man rotation, you know, maybe subtracts from some of that upside there. But yeah, I mean, he was just, you know, pretty excellent last year, albeit in a half season, right? So you do have to, you know, just be careful a little bit. But yeah, in terms of the K to walk, 23%, right? That's elite. His ERA was under 3. His whip was under 1, right? All of that looks really good. So it's interesting to think of him against like Glass now, right? Because those are both Dodgers arms who, you know, you don't have a ton of confidence to make it through the season, and they're going almost right next to each other. So I might prefer Glass now, even though he showed some, you know, erosion in the skills last year. But yeah, it's a tough one. It's a guy who I'd like to have, but the price is you know, you got to really pay up. So that's unfortunate. Mm-hmm.
All right, staying with the Dodgers, Tommy Edman is going to be out to start the season, dealing with still with some lingering injuries from last year. Really, it's more interesting because it opens up an opportunity for Hyesung Kim to get more playing time. And for him, really, I would say Kim's kind of excels at average and speed and not much else beyond that. But he, if roster resources is correct, he slots in as the number 9 hitter in the Dodgers offense, which actually is like a really premium position, I would say, compared to other number 9 hitters across the league. Because if you get on base, now you've got you know, Shohei Ohtani, Mookie Betts coming up right after you. Is there any interest in grabbing a guy like him who, you know, might be able to get a boost in speed, some decent average, and if everything turns out right, probably some runs as well?
I think his appeal is mostly as like a steel streamer in a, you know, like a online championship type format. I would think he'd be drafted in like a main event where there's 450 players drafted, but yeah, I think you can leave him out on the wire in, you know, shallower formats. But let's say the Dodgers are facing a string of righties and, you know, either in your matchup, you want some speed, or for your roto, you want some speed. I think he's a decent guy to turn to, but the average, you know, I know he was good in Korea with the average, but his BABIP was really propping up a lot of that last year, I think. So yeah, I think it's kind of a steals only profile for the most part.
Sure. All right. Looking at now just kind of players who are injured, if there's any interest in them, even with the injury, Jackson Holliday, dealing with this, basically broke his hand, this hamate bone. Looks like he is going to be on the injured list to start the season. I think Baltimore has indicated he probably will be even out for the entirety of April. So if he misses a full month of baseball, you know, how does this hit his draft stock? Is this someone that you'd still like to target in late rounds, or are you happy to kind of let him go to the waiver wire and see if you can get him as a cheap pickup there?
Yeah, this is a bummer. You know, you'd think it would be a season where Holliday could hopefully take a big step forward, and obviously this is already, you know, an obstacle for him. So yeah, I think I would wait, maybe if I have another good option at second base, and get him as kind of like my second option. But second base is, it's a tough position to invest two, you know, like top 200 picks in, or top 250 picks in even. So yeah, I think I probably will leave him out there, let somebody else take him. It's just unfortunate that he's going to have a late start to the year.
Yeah, and it's not kind of like the situation we had with Zach Neto last year, where Neto felt like a guy who, you know, even missing a month could easily give you, you know, something to the tune of like a 2020 season. I think what he ended up with was 26-26. So I don't think Holliday is there yet, where like even in limited production, he could get you a 2020 season. Unfortunately, I just don't think he's developed his game to that point just yet. He could get there in the future, but that's not where he's at right now. So yeah, I'm kind of inclined to agree. I'm less likely to draft him, you know, as the last guy in like a 23 round draft right now.
Yeah, I do think I saw that his cast is off. So, like, obviously he has a long recovery process in terms of strengthening, and, you know, it's high impact right on his hand. So I'm hopefully he can maybe be mid or late April and, you know, beat that early May timeline, hopefully.
Yeah. Well, the weird thing about Holliday is the fact that two other guys also broke their hamate bone, but their timetable's a little bit better compared to Holliday. Corbin Carroll and Francisco Lindor both broke their hamate bone. Both of them have already undergone surgery. Both of them are guys that, you know, Carroll definitely was going in the first round before any of this news came out. Lindor kind of coming in at the beginning of the second round, or maybe mid second round, depending on how much, you value his all around skills. Both of them indicated they should be ready by opening day. Would you want to target either of these guys in rounds one or two in your drafts?
Yeah, I feel like I need a round at least of discount on either one to go for them, just because, you know, even if they, I'm not optimistic that they'll make opening day, but I don't think they'll miss a ton of time. But yeah, you think maybe their power is sapped just a little bit. I think Carroll will be able to make up for it with the speed though. So yeah, I think I'd be hoping for at least a half round discount on Carroll and maybe a round discount on Lindor to start considering them. It's just, you really want to go for safety in your first couple of picks, and picking someone who's a question mark to start opening day is just, it's a tough place to begin your draft from.
Right. And it's always kind of the funny thing too, with like Lindor, who I think has historically always started out slow, and now he will have to start out slow because he's rehabbing from an injury. Carroll has, you know, been up and down in terms of really elite seasons and then really poor seasons. So hopefully, you know, these injuries don't affect them in a way that, you know, affects their season long performance, but it does affect their performance in April, and April still matters for fantasy baseball, even if it's a long season. So, yeah, really tough for both those guys. But yeah, I think you generally want to go for safety in the first two rounds anyways. I know there was kind of a PitchCon presentation on like different targets you'd like to target in different rounds. And generally, I think the consensus was round one and two, just go for safety, right? You can gamble a little bit more in later rounds, but kind of draft the sure thing if you can in those early rounds, because that's where you're going to get a lot of your production for the entire season.
Yeah. One exception I will say is if you, like, let's say you've been playing in a league for a long time and you usually do pretty well and it's a playoffs league. If you feel good about making the playoffs, you know, take the discount on these guys, right? Obviously, you don't want to take both of them and completely handicap yourself. But if you feel good about, you know, your ability to manage through an injury to one of your best players for a few weeks, you know, I think that they could be really good for you, you know, come September when you're playing in the playoffs and trying to, you know, bring home the championship.
Yeah, one comparison I have that maybe isn't completely fair, and it's really just only the Corbin Carroll because of both young guys. But I think of back to last year when Gunnar Henderson got hurt and got a little bit of a discount because he was hurt. Ended up the season wasn't like the best season that you would have expected, but that's also because the season before was incredible, right? I think 40 plus homers from Gunnar and you know, a bunch of steals as well. Corbin at least has had like three seasons of like pretty decent production, right? It's not like he was a one hit wonder and now he gets hurt and you don't know what to do about him. But I think there is just when I think about young players getting hurt, Gunnar Henderson is the one that comes to mind because of recency bias and just how it ended up not really working out for him, even though he did come back from injury relatively quickly.
Yeah, he tried to make up for it with the steals a little bit. I think he got the 30, but the power just took such a big step back that he wasn't really able to, you know, return that kind of ADP 15 where he was at.
Yeah. All right. Well, we did say this was a mailbag episode. We do have a couple questions, thanks to some of the folks from Twitter. And so we'll go through those and just kind of talk through, kind of answer these questions. So we're going to start out with Dylan DSage1010 on Twitter, who asks, how confident should we be in a Zebby Matthews and Braxton Ashcraft breakout? Obviously talked about Zebby a little bit. Just to set the floor, some PL projections for both these guys. Braxton Ashcraft projected for a 3.87 ERA, 1.26 whip with a 22.5% strikeout rate. Zebby Matthews, 4.03 ERA, 1.26 whip with a 24.2% strikeout rate. I think my first question to you is, how would you define a breakout from either of these guys right now? Both of them are probably fringe top 100 pitchers right now, right? Guys who probably are hanging out on your waiver wire come beginning of April. So how would you want to, what would you say is defined as a breakout for either of these two guys?
Yeah, I think it would be like slightly, but clearly beating those projections. And then, you know, over close to 30 starts and, you know, around 150 innings. Ashcraft's kind of a weird one because he was really good last year in the majors, but he was a swing man. So he covered 70 innings across 26 games and had a 2.71 ERA, which is great. But, you know, that's not going to fully translate if he's being used as a consistent 5 to 6 inning guy. So, yeah, I think slightly overperforming those projections would be a breakout. Obviously, Zebby, you know, that would be a drastic improvement for him. But I do think there's been a little bit of bad luck for him. So, yeah, I think that's kind of what it would look like for them to quote unquote breakout, you know, be a roster mainstay in most formats by the end of the season.
Yeah, both these guys not on teams that are going to win a lot, unfortunately. Ashcraft with the Pirates, Matthews with the Twins. So they're probably already not going to be very helpful in wins leagues. And so you're really kind of hoping that the ratios come down and the strikeouts, you know, are able to go up. You know, if either of them could even get to, you know, 150 strikeouts next year, I think that'd be kind of a positive for either of them. You know, not saying that they're going to hit 180 innings for both of them, right, based on the numbers we know from previous years, it'll probably be tough for them to get to that point. But if they can be consistent and have like an ERA that's, you know, what, 3.5 would probably be pretty great from either of these guys, right? You take that in a heartbeat.
Yeah. I mean, if you asked me last year about Zebby breaking out, you know, with his stuff being up in spring training, you know, he's one of my favorite targets last year and had a couple good starts, but obviously it was not a good season for him. So, yeah, I think, you know, being burned once or twice on the guy, it doesn't mean you quit him, but it does mean you know, he's failed more in the majors than he's succeeded, and you have to acknowledge that. And even though the stuff looks good and the K-minus walk looks good, you know, you got to start seeing results at some point. So I think, you know, I'm not confident in him breaking out, but when you look at him at like ADP 290, 300, I feel as good about his chances as, you know, probably better than some other guys around there, like Parker Messick, right? He was decent, but doesn't have a high ceiling, I don't think. Bailey Ober, you know, we need to see what the velo looks like. So yeah, I think if you're looking for upside, you know, I would look towards a guy like him for sure.
Yeah, that sounds like a good idea, especially at that price, right? Like at that point, the breakout is the fact that he stayed on your roster.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, next question from at Mets Colts fan. Two great teams to pick, I guess. But how do you value position value when drafting? I think maybe the way to think about this is, you know, what positions generally are you going to try to target higher level guys at, or you're willing to just kind of wait on them because you know the depth is there?
Yeah, this one is tough because it's very format dependent. I guess one way I value position is, you know, I use Fangraph's auction calculator typically for my drafts, and, you know, it bakes in some positional adjustments there, especially catcher is the biggest one. So that's one thing that I do. I think I'm also not often taking a first baseman super high. You know, I have in one of my drafts this year, but I'm usually comfortable kind of getting a mid-tier first baseman. So yeah, that one is one that sticks out to me. Also shortstop, I think it's deep, but you know, you want one guy who's at least a top 100 guy, if not higher, just because there's so many talented players at the position. So you don't want to fall behind. And then pitching, I'm the type of person who feels really good about my ability to identify mid-round pitchers. So, you know, my first like eight picks, I'll probably usually go like at least five hitters, if not six, just because, you know, I feel comfortable in kind of building my staff, you know, the next 10 rounds or so.
Yeah. And I would say one thing that really helps about any auction calculator, but is just generally understand like the, let's just say like you're in a 10 team league, right? Just for easy sake, three outfielders and then one of everything else. Right. If you could compare the value of like the eighth best shortstop to the eighth best second baseman, right? How different are they in terms of their dollar values on the auction calculator without any sort of positional adjustment, right? Auction calculators will add, you know, dollars to certain positions because the value there is worse. But if you can understand, hey, the eighth best second baseman is like this much worse than the eighth best shortstop, then maybe that's an indication that you want to go for a higher value second baseman, because you can, you know, that you'll be able to get kind of an equal value shortstop a little bit later in the draft, and not necessarily lose any sort of, you know, money value for all your for your entire team, right? Obviously, this is all just based on projection, so none of it is ever going to actually pan out in terms of how the team actually works. But when you're constructing a team in the draft, right, that's kind of how you make your value propositions of, well, I know the eighth best shortstop is as good as the fourth best second baseman. So maybe it's, I'm willing to wait on shortstop right now, and I can grab a second base now and then wait on shortstop a little bit later.
Yeah, and I try to be pretty flexible like that. You know, I very rarely am looking at a certain round or even group of rounds and saying I need to get X position in these couple of rounds. So yeah, I think it really just depends on kind of how the room falls to you a little bit, and then definitely your format and, you know, your scoring and eligibility and all those type of things.
Yeah. And I mean, a good example of this too is that like the mock draft that we did at the end of the World Series, right? No one picked catcher for the longest time. And so we just depressed catcher value because we're like, whenever the catcher run eventually happens, we know we're still probably going to end up with a top five catcher because we were positioned in a place in the draft where we could probably react to it, right? And so some positions are just going to get naturally depressed because the run doesn't happen, right? There could be a random third baseman run where like somehow now the only thing you're left with is like Matt Chapman in the eighth round, because somehow everyone decided we need to get a third baseman now. Right. In that case, third base is really valuable. But in other cases, like you could wait till round 12, round 13 to grab a starting third baseman if you don't feel great about anything after Jose Ramirez.
Yep. Some of those dynamics, you got to try to feel them out on the fly the best you can.
Yeah. All right, moving on to the next question. Thanks to @ Violet Gill. Love this question because it's really relates to my home league. How would you approach pitching in a head-to-head league draft where innings pitched is a scored category? So I guess first question, have you been in a league where innings pitched is a category?
I have not. I've done quality starts, which, you know, is sort of similar but a little bit different. What is it? Does it typically replace wins, or what are you, from your experience?
So my home league's a 6x6, and we do innings pitched and quality starts, which kind of messes with some things a little bit. We've had plenty of arguments over the years of whether that scoring makes any sense or not. But it kind of is a double whammy for like really good starters who get quality starts are also like elite innings pitched guys. Generally it would be kind of in replacement of wins or quality starts.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So in that case, I mean, if it's in place of wins, you know, team quality goes out the window pretty much. It doesn't, which could be nice, right? You can focus mostly on the skills of the pitchers rather than, you know, the team around them and their likelihood for a win. So yeah, I think from that angle, you know, you just try to get guys who are a little bit more reliable to go deep. And I guess durability, you know, it would factor in even more in that case, right? You generally want guys with good track records, but at the same time, you know, pitchers can be very injury prone regardless of their past. And maybe it would increase the value of like multi-inning relievers, you know, guys who pitch really often and, you know, or can go like 80 to 90 innings in a season or something like that. Like thinking Tyler Rogers, he appears in a ton of games, right? So maybe his value would pop a little bit more, even if he's not going to get a ton of saves in that kind of format.
Yeah. I think the sometimes you like think of like, oh, I need to get a high innings pitch guy, right? I need to get a Logan Webb. I need to get a Framber Valdez. But from my experience, having done innings pitched leagues for, you know, basically 5 years at this point, innings pitched is a lot more reliant on how you manage your team on a week-to-week basis, right? Can you get those two start guys? Can you get, you know, like you said, those relievers that pitch a lot, right? I think in a draft specifically, yeah, maybe you can kind of value guys like Logan Webb or, you know, Framber Valdez. So those are the two names that always come to mind for me. You're right, guys who get a lot of quality starts, right? You can value those guys a little bit more than how you normally would in just kind of a standard 5x5 league. But I do think innings pitch leagues require a little bit more work in terms of waiver wire drafting, waiver wire analysis, because you just need to get two start guys every single week if you can. It also does mean, you know, not that it depresses the value of ratios and things like that, because those are still categories, but sometimes, you know, you go wins hunting for pitchers, not that it's ever a really great strategy, but you'll elevate guys who are on better teams, right? But like you said, now that team quality is kind of out of the window, you can grab just like the number three starter from, I don't know, let's throw out a team like the Marlins, who will go like five innings every single week, because at that point, it's less about is he going to get the win and more about like is he going to be consistent every single week in and out.
Yeah, I think for the draft, the biggest takeaway for me would be like your last two rounds, you know, pick pitchers that you know you're going to churn, right? Assuming that the league allows a fair amount of moves each week or whatever the scoring period is, you know, you're not going to do everything you can to just maximize innings, like you said. But yeah, it's a category that you want to, you know, secure if it's a head-to-head league. Where, yeah, you know that you're going to have to go for two star guys and be streaming. So, yeah, be willing to churn those last couple of roster spots and, you know, just kind of accept that guys at the bottom of your roster are not going to be staying there very long.
Yeah, and if you really want to be devious, look at the matchups for week one and just base, like, your last three, four rounds on that and just be like, who is pitching that week against a soft opponent? Because week one is also just notorious on, like, pitchers not going deep anyways, right? So you might as well stock it up with guys who see what they've got. And then if they don't have anything, you could just drop them because it didn't really matter why you picked them up in the first place. So, yeah. All right. Final question. Thanks to @JoshJW419. This is an interesting question. Head-to-head categories, 8x8 keeper league. I don't even know what categories are in an 8x8 league, but needless to say, that sounds interesting. A lot of things to keep track of. Keeping six hitters for the first time with Tucker, Vlad, Caminero, Kurtz, Roman Anthony, and James Wood. Congratulations. That sounds sick. But what starting pitcher do you have the most faith in being an ace between Max Fried, Logan Webb, Hunter Green, or I'm going to assume this is Joe Ryan. But yeah, between those four, who do you have the most faith in being an ace?
Yeah, I mean, they're all guys I feel comfortable having as my SP1, unless it's like a super shallow league. For me, it's probably Green, but if you're going safety, I think it would be Freed. You know, Green's the highest drafted one and also the highest upside. You know, I think his stuff and his skills are at a point where if he's on the field, he's going to be, you know, a really solid pitcher with a ton of strikeouts and good ratios. So, yeah, in a shallower league, which, you know, hopefully this is, I would feel comfortable taking the swing on Green there. But yeah, if you're just looking for more stability because, you know, your hitting's really good and you just want a safe staff, I think I would look at Freed, especially if it's a wins league.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you there, at least in terms of Freed. Green, I think for me, it's just like the freak injuries are just so random for him. And not to say that Freed is, you know, never going to get hurt, but I do think there's just a level of safety with him that we've seen for the past couple of years that we haven't necessarily seen from the other guys. But I think, again, if you're chasing ceiling, I think Hunter Green, it's definitely the guy who easily could be a top five pitcher or hurt, right? That's kind of the two dynamics for Hunter Green. I think Freed is like, you know, easily a top 15, 20 guy, could be a top 10 guy if everything swings right. But he's more likely to just have a really, really strong floor, whereas Green is, you know, a really good ceiling play.
Yeah, the other two, you know, they're definitely guys that I like, but I do think they're a tier below, but should still, you know, provide you really good quality. Although with Webb, it's more the ERA and the volume, and with Ryan, it's more of the whip is his biggest asset. So, you know, those are factors to consider.
Yeah, and then assuming one of your eight categories is wins, that probably puts Freed a little bit of a leg up over Green, but, you know, not so much that it'd be like, oh, I'm definitely going to go Freed over Green in this case. All right, well, that kind of wraps it up for those questions. Obviously, if you have questions, feel free to ring us up on the Discord, or, you know, we've got our Twitter as well. Feel free to send us questions there, and we'll address them if we get them over the course of this season. But for our final segment, we are going to talk about ADP movers. And so the sample that we're taking this from is from 19 online championship drafts between January 17th and February 6th. So a couple of weeks ago, and then just 13 online championship drafts from this past week. So February 7th to February 18th, so past basically a week and a half. So for those who aren't familiar, online championship, the format is it's a roto with standard categories. There's 12 teams. You've got 14 hitters who are starting. You've got 9 pitchers and 7 bench guys. And then with these ADP movers, we're not really going to talk about anyone who moved because of injury because, A, we already just talked about them. And also just like, what's the point of talking about injured guys? Because it's obvious that their ADP is going to move. So, starting off with the fallers, we're going to kick off with Troy Melton, pitcher with the Tigers. He's dropped from ADP 280 to 322. What are some kind of the factors for why the ADP has dropped for him?
Yeah, this one in the fallers, I think, is the clearest. You know, the Tigers this month have signed Framber and Justin Verlander. So they've added two arms, but they lost Reese Olson for the season, right? So really the net is one. But that one addition does seem to push Melton from competing for the fifth spot to competing for the sixth spot with the KBO signee. I think KBO, maybe MPB, Drew Anderson. So, yeah, it just looks like the role is not that clear here. And this is like a, you know, it's a no IL, no NA spot league, right? So you ideally want guys who are contributing from the jump. And it looks like Melton's either going to be in the minors, you know, staying stretched out, or as a swingman. So I do really like the skills, but this is one where, you know, the price plummeting close to pick 330 is one I can understand.
Yeah. And I think the risk ultimately is like, what if he sticks as the swingman, right? If he's in the minors getting stretched out, at least that means he's the next man up sort of, you know, mentality. But if he's in the bullpen, I don't know. It feels like a little bit tougher to be like, okay, if let's just say Justin Verlander goes out with an injury and Melton is a reliever. It feels a little bit hard to be like, all right, now he's going to be in there and pitch 5 innings every time he's out there. And I just don't feel like that's going to necessarily happen if he doesn't have a solidified rotation spot by opening day.
Right, and the Tigers are, you know, they're no stranger to unconventional pitching roles, right? Like someone like Brant Herder, they use, you know, like 2-inning stints all the time. So Yeah, he might just kind of be in that weird space where he's providing them value, but a little bit dodgy for fantasy, at least, for most of this season. So maybe he'll be a good post-hype guy for next year, but in the shallower leagues, I get staying away from him for the most part this year.
Next, we've got Ivan Herrera dropping from 149 to 173. Frustratingly for Herrera, he doesn't have catcher ability in all leagues. That already kind of depresses some of his value with just being a utility only guy. But yeah, how do you kind of explain the drop in 24 picks for him?
Yeah, this one's kind of been a gamble the drafters have been taking. In NFBC, you need 10 starts in season to gain eligibility. So people have been taking him as a util only with the hope that he'll gain that catcher eligibility. And these leagues are two catcher leagues, right? So catcher eligibility is huge. But yeah, this one, Herrera, the news is it's not clear yet, but he has been limited in throwing and hitting with some recovery from an elbow injury as spring training started. So he's not working with the catchers, every single day, and seems like a lock to gain that eligibility even the first month of the season. So yeah, I think people are just a little bit wary of that. Seems like outfield he might gain before catcher, which obviously wouldn't be as valuable. So yeah, I think that this price is one I'd feel comfortable with even given the new news, just because he is a good hitter and I think he'll be a well-rounded contributor. And then you hope, he gains catcher eligibility in kind of the first half of the season. But I think at the old price, it seemed like he kind of needed to gain it really soon to be worth it.
I think the real challenge too is that no one is pushing him for that DH spot. There's no one on their bench that would be like, yeah, he should be DHing, right? And so the Cardinals don't necessarily lose anything by not having him start at catcher, right? Pedro Pages is not a great offensive catcher, a good defensive catcher. But, if they have Ivan Herrera at DH and Pages at catcher, they're not necessarily going to have a better lineup with Herrera at catcher. And then, I don't know, who do we got? Thomas Segese at DH, right? That's just not going to be a thing that works out for them. So right now they're not necessarily incentivized to have him not DH unless they want to use that spot as a way to kind of, get reps for other guys and have some rest for available players and cycle people through the DH spot.
Right. And then when you think about it long term for the Cardinals, they have AAA top 100 catching prospect in Jimmy Crooks. They have one in A ball in Raynel Rodriguez. And then they have Leo Bernal in AA, who's a decent but not top 100 prospect. So obviously, it would be great for Herrera's value if he catches long term, but they are definitely not dependent on him doing so for kind of their rebuild. So yeah. That's something to keep in mind.
Mm-hmm. All right. Ryan Nelson going from pick 252 to 274. So dropping about, two rounds for him. I guess recent news that could have impacted this, Zach Gallen's coming back to the Diamondbacks. I don't know how much that impacts Nelson's spot, though, that much. But yeah, any thoughts here about why the kind of the dip for him?
Yeah, this one's kind of the first one that we talked about where it doesn't really seem to be clear why he's dropping. He was, probably their second most effective starter last year behind Merrill Kelly before the trade. So I don't really get it. But that's not to say I was in on Nelson at 250. I think he has a good fastball and that's about it, right? Nick has talked about it all the time. So you're going to see some regression this year if he doesn't develop at least one secondary. So yeah, this one was a little bit puzzling. Obviously 20 picks isn't a huge drop in, this late in the draft, but it is still notable. Looks like maybe the Diamondbacks will go six man since bringing Gallen in just based on roster resource. So maybe that's bringing him down a little bit, but maybe it's just, people are going for some more high upside guys as opposed to a more kind of stable SP, seven.
Yeah, and the one thing you note about that six-man rotation is that it's because they currently have four pitchers on their roster who don't have any options in Merrill Kelly, Zach Gallen, Eduardo Rodriguez, and Michael Soroka being their offseason signing. Nelson and Brandon Pfaadt both still have options. Not saying that either of those guys would ever get demoted, but that's why roster resource has them as a six-man rotation, because right now, the way it stands, they've got four guys who can't get demoted, and then they've got two guys who are probably too good to be demoted to AAA. So, very interesting situation going on in Arizona right now. All right, Abner Uribe, going from 145 to 166, reliever in Milwaukee, and I guess probably the reason here is just we don't really exactly know who the closer is going to be with the Brewers, right?
Yeah, it's still a guessing game. You know, McGill was a closer for all of last year when he was healthy, but Uribe performed excellent. So, yeah, I mean, I'm kind of on the side of deferring to the incumbent. He's going about 30 picks earlier, but yeah, I think this one is just an uncertainty thing. And people, you know, just want some share of the Brewers bullpen because they're a good team. His ADP is already back up almost 10 picks in the last week from, you know, where it fell to. So, yeah, I think people just aren't really sure what to do in this situation. And this is a league where saves are really valuable. So, you know, maybe you take him as your second reliever and then a couple of other specs or, you know, plan to spend some fab to kind of get a second lockdown reliever if it doesn't work out. I think for me, I'm just kind of passing because I don't like the uncertainty for a reliever. But, you know, I do understand that the skills are really strong.
Yeah, and historically, right, like Brewers have never really been like a closer by committee sort of team. And they're more than happy to use elite pitchers in fireman roles too, right? Obviously, Josh Hader was the standout there for many years in that ninth inning spot. But they're more than happy to, you know, put someone in the seventh or eighth inning they need to put out a fire, and Uribe could be that guy for them instead of having him as their established closer.
Yeah, I do think he has a better health track record than McGill. At least McGill's never cleared 50 innings in a major league season, so you know there could be a situation where McGill goes down again and then Uribe, you know, that pick pays off really well.
All right, next guy, Jaren Duran, going from 67 to 76. So only 9 picks, but still a drop for a guy who honestly kind of just feels like he's been consistently just dropping over the last year, you know, probably is the accurate way to say it. But, yeah, what's your thought on Duran? Is this a guy who you want to hitch your ride to, or you just rather let someone else deal with the headache?
Yeah, he's the biggest non-injury-related faller in the top 100 in the past couple of weeks. So it's interesting to see. I don't know exactly what's behind it other than he's kind of a guy whose value is just driven by volume, right? He's been around 700 plate appearances the last 2 years, and that's kind of allowed him to just be solid in every single category. I'm looking, you know, around him with the outfielders. I see Buxton and Merrill right before him, and then Bellinger and Riley Green right after him. So yeah, I feel like I might pass on Duran for Green and Bellinger even. I know that projections are kind of a little bit lukewarm on Jaren Duran, and he does almost kind of like Semien, I guess, in his prime, you know, need to play 155 games or so to kind of return value.
Right. And that value is still like at best, like a 15-25 season, right? I think that's maybe what you can expect out of him in terms of like, you know, let's give me, if you want to be generous, 2025, right? Maybe 2030, maybe he decides to run a little bit more. But this is a guy who, you know, not necessarily like incredible elite numbers coming off the page, unfortunately.
Right. I mean, when we look back at his career, I think the 2024, you know, will definitely stick out as kind of an aberration. You know, he's a really solid above average player, but you know, that 21 homer, 34 steal, 111 runs, and 735 plate appearances. You know, he just completely maxed out, and the price just kind of got out of control as a result. So, yeah, I think he's more of just a solidly above average accumulator, maybe in like that when Brian Reynolds was having his best seasons. You know, I see a similar kind of stat line for Jaren Duran. And that is a valuable, you know, back of the top 100 type player, but probably not like top 70 like he was going at the beginning of the draft season.
Sure. Yeah. If you work out your draft well, like he could be your outfielder 3, and that type of production would be really solid. So
yeah, keep your team balanced too.
Yeah. Moving from fallers to risers now, the first guy on the list, someone really interesting to me because I have him at Dynasty now, but JJ Weatherholt going from pick 271 to pick 238. So moving up 33 picks. The first sample of drafts that you selected at that time, Brendan Donovan got traded in the middle of that, I believe. So now there is a wide open hole in the middle infield for JJ Weatherholt to fill. So, yeah, any thoughts on him? Is he a guy who, you know, we were kind of just talking about Jackson Holliday and how he's a guy that you just wouldn't really take in the last round. Does JJ Weatherholt kind of maybe fill that slot as like a late round middle infielder to pick up.
Yeah, I think like if you're desperate for a second base option, or you know, you go with like two late second basemen to kind of see which one ends up panning out better, he would stick out. He doesn't have second base in NFBC, but it seems like if he's on the team, that's where he's going to play. So that'll be nice. I kind of preferred it when he was going to play third base, it looks like, when they traded Arenado, just because third base is pretty weak too, and he'd have that CIMI eligibility, but doesn't seem like that's going to be the case. I do think there's going to be a little bit of an adjustment period for him in the majors, as there is for so many rookies, even a polished guy like him. And I'm looking at like Leyber Torres and Marcus Semien, who are going after him, and I do think I'd prefer them at second base. They're not exciting, right? Those are boring guys, but I don't think Weatherholt is going to be, you know, incredible from day one, right? He's still pretty young. He's had one season in the minor leagues, and he's not on a good offense. So I do think he's going to have a great career, but I don't think for fantasy this year I'm in at that price.
Yeah. Moving on to Jacob Wilson, who has also popped up 21 picks, going from pick 198 to pick 177, still rising too. Is there any thoughts on this guy where, you know, you look at his stat line, none of it screams like, oh, that was like really good. But is this just kind of a reactionary, hey, he's in Sacramento and the team around him is really good, so maybe we should draft Jacob Wilson?
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out what's going on here. I guess maybe he was a little bit underpriced before. I did have some interest in him at pick 200 as kind of my MI, but yeah, maybe now there's a lot of teams who are like, I need batting average, and Jacob Wilson obviously sticks out as a great option for that. So I think that could be what's going on here. But I do have some concerns about, you know, the volume. The A's have a solid lineup, but because he's a guy who's a better kind of he's a good batting average hitter, but his real life batting line is just kind of expected to be slightly above league average. It looks like he might hit like fifth or sixth in the lineup. I think sixth seems most likely. So that's a little concerning just from a volume perspective.
Yeah, and you all of a sudden lose touch with guys like Nick Kurtz, Shayla Galeers, Tyler Soderstrom. Like, these aren't guys who are going to be batting you in. They're not going to be giving you any protection. So, you know, there's kind of just less runs and RBI opportunities in that spot, unfortunately, for Wilson.
Right, like he's probably a better hitter than Jeff McNeil, who is behind on Fangraphs right now. But if they do go Kurtz in the leadoff spot, like has been rumored, you know, they might want that lefty-righty alternate, and that puts Wilson down at six. So maybe he'll get back up as leadoff against lefties, but that is a little concerning.
Yeah. Moving to Colorado, we've got Willy Castro, the utility Superman who signed with them. That's caused his ADP to jump 20 picks, going from 296 to 276. You know, I think with Castro, the easy evaluation there is, hey, this is a guy who's in Colorado, right? This is going to boost his offense. But beyond that, what do you like about Willy Castro where he could be worth this late round flyer?
I mean, he was great a couple of years ago in terms of his eligibility and, you know, contributions, but really the main thing that sticks out is just the eligibility. I think he's going to have useful moments at home, but I really just don't see a situation where he's startable away from Colorado unless, like, the pitcher they're facing is just terrible at holding runners. He only stole 10 bases last year and 14 the year before that after 33 in 2023, so he's kind of trending the wrong way in the speed department. So, yeah, I think he's like a decent late round option if you want some potential speed, but mainly flexibility. Let's say you really didn't do a good job of getting positionally versatile guys for like your first, you know, for your whole starting lineup, and you kind of need to fill that hole with one or two guys. You know, Willy Castro is a guy you can turn to there.
Yeah. MICI outfielder eligibility, you know, might get you a couple steals here, but has never really necessarily been known for his power. And like you said, that average was pretty awful last season, 226. So it'll go up a little bit in Colorado, but it might not go up enough to really warrant a look. Another guy with third base eligibility, but only third base eligibility, Matt Chapman, moving up 16 picks, going from 176 to 160. I kind of jokingly think of Matt Chapman as just kind of like, if you have no third baseman and he's available, like, you kind of have to take him because it really is no one good after him. But yeah, Chappie moving up a couple spots. Just any insights on him, and kind of, is he worth kind of you know, not necessarily grabbing an earlier round, but targeting in, I guess, like round 12 at this point.
Yeah, this one I was a little confused by because there's no news, but I do think it's kind of what you're saying is he's one of the last kind of everyday reliable third base options, even if he's not, you know, an awesome player. I wonder how much of it might be connected to like the Jordan Westberg news, right? He's the third baseman 10 and Matt Chapman's the third baseman 11. So with Westberg, seems like maybe he might be out for a long time. The Orioles are saying some really concerning things about him, but not really being transparent. So yeah, the third base pool just thins out even more. And you look after him and it's Royce Lewis, it's Murakami, right? It's Jose Caballero, Addison Barger, right? Those guys all have very clear flaws, whether it's health, platoon, you know, one-dimensional profile. So yeah, I guess maybe people who don't have a third baseman are looking around and seeing Chapman and, you know, they might not love him as a player, but they love him versus the alternative. So they're pushing him up the board a little bit. So I do think the projections on him are pretty good. So I liked the value initially, and now it's probably around fair. So yeah, I think he's like your decent last, you know, last ditch option for starting third baseman in shallow league.
Yeah, it's kind of like he's the outfielder eight who will finish as the outfielder eight. You know, like he's not going to be worse, but he's not going to be better. And you look at some of the guys after him, right? Like Royce Lewis, you mentioned, or Addison Barger, right? These are guys who like could have better ceilings than Chapman, but their floors are a lot worse. If you want to just go for the floor play, I think, yeah, Chapman, it kind of makes sense why he's jumping up, just because people are realizing, oh, I really need a third baseman who can at least give me something. And Chapman definitely matches that description.
Yeah, I mean, you won't find the only everyday third baseman you'll find after him is like Lewis, I guess, Murakami, and then you probably got to go down a ways to like Alec Bohm, right? And he's just the most boring player in the world, pretty much. So. Yeah, he has a time and a place, right? I've drafted him plenty of times, but it's not as you're starting third baseman.
Yeah, for sure. All right, a guy who I think, you know, we've talked about him a little bit on the pod. I think he is finally getting maybe a little bit of the healing he deserves. But Geraldo Perdomo, moving from 85 to 76, so bumping up 9 picks, basically one entire round. He's the biggest riser on the top 100 besides Eugenio Suarez, who was signed by the Reds. So that obviously makes sense why he shot up those rankings. But Geraldo Perdomo finished as the number 3 shortstop last season. And he has not necessarily been picked as such, but I think maybe this is a sign that people are catching on and thinking that maybe Perdomo deserves to get a little bit of a bump in the rankings for his performance last season.
Yeah, this one's funny to me because I'm thinking about it versus Duran, and they're kind of at the same price now, but going different directions, even though they're both like accumulator-based profiles. I'm a little wary buying off of the career year. That's usually something I mostly stay away from, but it sounds like you might be a little bit more optimistic. So whereas, you know, are you just kind of, you think the projections, you know, probably don't give him enough credit for the improvements he made last year and are waiting past years too heavily? Or what's your optimism on Perdomo? What's driving it?
I think part of it is maybe some blind belief in health working out for him. You kind of mentioned him and Duran being at the same spot, right? Like we talked about Duran, like if he kind of finishes as like a 15-20 guy, we'd be pretty happy about that. I think all the projections have Perdomo as like a guy who would be 15-20, and if he has a much better season, it could be a little bit better than that. And so I think like because he's at the same price as Duran now, right? I think the pick makes more sense than where he was going at like a round later. Where you might not be able to find a guy who can get you, you know, 20 steals and double-digit homers. So, I don't know. I think Perdomo, like you said, buying into the career year is a really risky thing to do. But he does still have speed, right? Like, we know he's going to get steals at least. And, I wouldn't say, like, this Diamondbacks offense is particularly scary, right? Especially with Cormac Carroll out too, that kind of sucks a little bit. But if Perdomo's going to be batting leadoff for this team with, if assuming everyone's healthy, Marte, Carroll, Gabriel Moreno right behind him, right? That's still a pretty solid top four, lineup that is going to get you, you know, a decent amount of stats.
Yeah. He scores, you know, he's going to score a ton of runs. He never strikes out, right? His contact ability is super impressive and he gets on base a lot. So I think that is a legit skill. I just think that you have to have built a team already with some pretty good power to draft him at shortstop. You know, I know he hit 20 last year, but you know, 15 or less seems more likely in the cards this year. So I don't think he's a bad player by any stretch, but I think at the new price, I'm probably pretty firmly out. But you know, he could back it up with almost as good of a year as last year and be a huge value again. You never know.
Right. And I guess in this league, this is like the sixth round, I guess, right? End of the sixth round ish. So, you know, if you just happen to invest in like a bunch of outfielders that mash a lot of homers and you need, you know, like a decent shortstop who can get you some steals, right? Perdomo might be that guy for you. But it does seem like the price, the players at this price point are all generally guys who, you know, get you what, like 15 to 20 in at least or other homers or stolen bases, and, you know, might be able to get you 10 to 15 in the other category. So I think that helps in Perdomo's case that like he at least can help you in, you know, four ish categories. Even if, you know, maybe the numbers in the homers aren't as high as maybe you'd like them to be. All right. Well, that is going to be it for us this week with This Week PL. Obviously, you can catch us on Twitter at that handle, at This PL. This Week PL, send us your questions there. Obviously, it's been fun to always do mailbag questions, and we're available there or on the Discord. So feel free to ask a question. We might cover it on the next episode. It is spring training. We're not sure when we're going to be going back to regular episodes, but for now, we will be kind of sticking with the every 2 weeks podcast. So we'll still be covering news and injuries as they come out, obviously. But yeah, baseball is literally right around the corner. Opening day is, what, a month and a half away. So that's going to be super exciting to talk about real baseball pretty soon. You can obviously send us your comments and questions at our email as well, thisweekplpod@gmail.com. You can find myself on Twitter at TheJohnCo. You can find Patrick at pfitzgerald_99. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe to the Pitcherless podcast feed on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, wherever else you listen to your podcast. Leave us a 5-star review if you enjoy the show. Lastly, sign up for Pitcherless Pro. By doing so, you can join us in the Pitcherless Discord and get advice from all the fantasy experts and writers over there. We did just release a new live draft assistant available for PL Pro members. So if that's something that you're interested, definitely check that out as well. But yeah, draft season is just ramping up. I know TGFBI invites just went out. RazSlam invites just went out. So a lot of these fun industry sort of groups are getting together and starting to draft. So yeah, it really feels like real baseball is just around the corner. So that's exciting. But that is going to be all for this week. We'll be back next time with another episode of This Week in Fantasy Baseball. For Patrick, I'm John, and we'll see you in the next one. Later, everyone.